Chapter 19. Tomb World. The broken bodies of red scimitars lay on examination slabs throughout the apothecarium. Most had already been harvested, but he'd ordered some set aside for more in-depth study. This he proceeded to do, taking scalpel and laser torch to battle-scarred meat. The chirurgeon lent itself to his efforts, bone saws whirring. It was a soothing sound, that whir. It was the sound of progress. One could measure advancement by the sound of the blade striking bone. They were making good time. But the eastern fringe was vast, and they sought one world among millions. Alkanex had barely stirred from the command deck for days. As far as Fabius was concerned, he could stay there. Wulver made regular reports over coded frequencies, keeping him abreast of their course. Fabius glanced towards the tertiary stratagerium in its antechamber. Hololithic star maps flickered in and out of sight as the cogitators constantly updated the sensory information. He would soon have a predictive destination, whatever Alkanex's intentions. Once he knew where they were going, he could dispense with Eidolon's lackey at his leisure. Until then, he could afford to make no move. Alkanex was the only one who knew where the gene tithe was, and until he had its location, he couldn't risk any harm befalling the prefect. Savona was in hiding, skulking through the lower decks. Korag and the others were keeping themselves occupied with their own studies and out of the way. Igori was holding the packs to their territory, and Alkanex had learned better than to disturb them. The status quo would hold for now, but the moment would come. He simply had to be ready, and quick. One of his hands began to tremble slightly, a muscle tremor, one of the early signs of the blight. He watched it until the palsy faded. "Stress," he grunted. He bent back to his task. He set aside his blades and caught hold of the exposed ribcage. Contrary to popular opinion, it was not one solid piece, but several. There was a surprising amount of flexibility to a space marine's internal workings. The transhuman body was a work of art. He strained for a moment, and then the bones parted with a sharp crack. He had tools for this task, but he preferred using his hands, when he could. A hiss of disgust caused him to look up at Khazra, who attempted to stare a hole through him. The space marine had said nothing for days, hanging from his upright slab. As if silence were the only weapon remaining to him. And perhaps it was. Fabius couldn't help but respect such determination, frustrating as it was. He smiled ruefully.
"Your thoughts are as clear to me as my own, Khazra. You think this a desecration, when in truth it is anything but. This is a sacred task, and one I take seriously. Our bodies are storehouses of knowledge to which only a select few hold the keys. I would be remiss in my duties if I did not take every opportunity to add to that knowledge. Think of what wisdom might be lost for want of study."
He turned back to the body and selected an auger loop from the tray of tools nearby. The eyepiece hooked snugly into the cranial ports on the left side of his skull. Microfilaments extended through the neural linkways inside the meat of his brain, and a free-floating hololithic projection flickered into being, projected from the side of the loop. The lenses of the eyepiece clicked as Fabius scanned the body. He picked up a section of harvested progenoid and studied it more closely.
"Gene markers from multiple sources. Curious, that."
Fabius examined the sample more closely as the chirurgeon continued its labours, flensing carapace from bone and cracking the latter so as to expose runnels of marrow for further testing.
"The progenoid gland displays minute deviations from the assumed source. Hybrid? Possibly. Further study is essential. If they have perfected the art of hybridization, it may prove a welcome addition to my own research, as well as a troubling harbinger as to the current state of the Imperium."
More samples were harvested, collected, and catalogued. The body was broken down into its component parts with an alacrity that even he found startling at times. The chirurgeon had learned well the art of bodily disassembly, and performed its function with an ease and eagerness that was unsettling. The Medicae harness clicked and hummed to itself as it worked, recording every moment for later study. Though whether this was for his benefit or its own, he was not entirely certain. He looked up at Khazra.
"You are an enigma, my friend, and one I intend to unlock. Despite the pull of entropy, it appears the Adeptus Mechanicus has made certain advancements in the art of zygote cultivation."
He gestured to the body.
"How many foundings has it been since the first, I wonder? How often have they changed the formula in order to avoid watering it down overmuch?"
He paused.
"I shall have to make a point of investigation. Perhaps there is something useful to be gained from interjecting myself into the process."
He looked at Khazra.
"Tell me, what founding is your chapter? 5th? 10th?
Khazra didn't answer. Fabius hadn't expected him to. He clucked his tongue in disappointment.
"I do not enjoy this, you know. I find little pleasure in the pain of another. The senselessness of it offends me. Your agony is a distraction. The sooner you have accepted your limitations in this matter, the sooner we can both move on to more productive uses of our time."
My most humble apologies for this waste of your time, Manflayer,"
his captive panted. The Space Marine grinned fiercely.
"I am sure that I will not endure for more than another few weeks at most."
Fabius frowned. In truth, he was already regretting the time he'd wasted keeping Khazra alive. The Red Scimitar refused to reveal anything. He seemed no more sensitive to pain than a brute animal, and had ceased screaming out of spite.
"Your bravado is commendable, if frustrating. Answer my question."
Khazra's grin did not waver.
"Go to whatever hell you were vomited up from."
Fabius removed the loop and set it aside. He stood, anger boiling through him. It was always the same. Brutes and fools, barbarians and shamans. They created more problems than they solved. The stubborn beast flesh creeping back and making a mockery of mankind's progress. Of his progress. He picked up torment.
"Fitting words, I think, for your epitaph. I see now, like all your mongrel kind, you prize your honor more than your life, and you will hold to it unto death. Thus, I see no reason to waste further time bandying words with a savage, not when I can get all the information I need from the databanks in your panoply."
He lifted torment.
"And from your carcass."
He swung the scepter down, intending to crush Khazra's skull. Instead, the Space Marine ripped his arm free of the restraint, hand flashing out to catch Torment's head on his palm. He grimaced in agony, but managed to free his other arm, jerking forward as he did so. Startled, Fabius stumbled back. The wounded warrior toppled from the slab as Torment was wrenched away. He was on his feet a moment later and lunging for Fabius's throat. Fabius scrabbled for his needler as his captive's blunt fingers clawed at his jugular. He was slammed backwards into a tray table, upending numerous instruments of inquiry. The scalpels and corers fell to the floor with a clatter. A big fist crashed against his face, scrambling his thoughts. Torment slashed out, but missed its mark. The Red Scimitar tackled him backwards, and they upended an examination slab, ripping it from the deck. Khazra caught his wrist and forced Torment away. The chirurgeon struck out, cutting and slicing, but the Space Marine drove another blow into the side of Fabius's head, knocking him flat and bouncing his skull off the deck. The chirurgeon, linked to his perceptions, spasmed in confusion. Fabius tried to roll away, to get to his feet, but suddenly found a broken length of restraint cable looped about his throat. The Red Scimitar hauled back on his improvised garrote, pressing one knee against the back of the chirurgeon as he did so.
"Would that I could pay you back for every hour of pain you have inflicted on me, butcher,"
Khazra growled.
"But unlike you, I will be quick."
Fabius clawed at the torn metal biting into his neck and tried to reach Torment, where it had rolled from his grip. Then, Abruptly, the pressure was gone. He toppled forward, coughing. He turned and saw the red scimitar struggling in Fulgrim's grip. The Primarch held the Space Marine's head between his palms. As Fabius watched, Fulgrim slowly crushed his captive's skull with no more effort than a man might smash an egg. Blood ran between the clone's fingers and dappled the deck. Khazra's body twitched once and then fell silent. Fulgrim lowered the body, a dazed look on his face. "He was trying to hurt you," he said. "I did not mean to kill him." He looked down at his hands in apparent bewilderment. Fabius hauled himself to his feet.
"How do you feel?"
he asked, voice raspy. "Sickened, but also elated." Fulgrim tore one of the sleeves from his suit and cleaned his hands fastidiously. "Is this how you feel when you kill?"
"Sometimes." Fabius rubbed his throat and looked down at the corpse. "More so when it's someone trying to kill me."
He looked at Fulgrim.
"You did well. I am proud of you."
Fulgrim didn't reply. Instead, he stared down at the body.
"He is not one of us. He is like us, but not."
"He belongs to one of your brothers."
Fulgrim looked at him.
"Which one?"
There was an eagerness in the words that Fabius found disconcerting.
"Can I see them?"
"No. No, they are dead, or as good as."
Fabius hurried to thwart this line of questioning. It would not do for Fulgrim to get it into his head to seek out his brothers. The ramifications of that were impossible to measure. Fulgrim frowned.
"I think you are lying, teacher."
"And if I am, it is for your own good. This universe is a swamp of horrors, Fulgrim. If you wish to survive it, you must listen to me. I have only your best interests at heart."
Fabius hesitated. Then, with a grimace, he reached out to the towering clone.
"I only want you to be safe. Safe to meet your full potential."
Fulgrim looked down at Fabius's hand as it touched his arm, and then at his face.
"Why? What am I to do? You have not said, and you will not explain what little I do know. You say you made me for a purpose, but you will not let me fulfill that purpose. You will not even let me out of this apothecarium."
"And yet you leave it anyway,"
Fabius snapped, drawing his hand back.
"You have disobeyed me in that, at least, and more than once."
He tapped a control on his vambrace. His armor systems were synced to those of the apothecarium, and at the tap of a button, a plethora of picked feed snapped to life on the viewscreens that studded the walls. On each of them, Fulgrim was visible, creeping through access tunnels or striding silently through the darkened corridors of the ship, or even fraternizing with the huddled Vatborn.
"I told you before, boy, I see everything."
Fulgrim drew himself up to his full height.
"Then you will have seen that none know of my presence, save the Vatborn. I have remained hidden, even from those I know would welcome me. My sons..."
"They are not your sons!"
Fabius drove his fist into an examination slab, cracking it. The chirurgeon clattered in dismay, and he resisted its attempts to calm him. The anger was necessary. He could not allow himself to be cowed by the being before him.
"They are his. Your sons yet slumber, their potential hidden away. But I will find them, and I will bring them to you. I will give you a new legion, but you must give me time."
Time. It always came down to time. He needed time, more time than the universe seemed willing to give him. Time to fix what was broken, to perfect the imperfect, to fix himself so that he might see to the rest. "Physician, heal thyself." But there was no time. No one understood, no one listened. Fulgrim, the original Fulgrim, had never listened, had always done as he wished, whatever the cost.
I do not want a new legion. I want to fix the one that is broken. Fulgrim leaned towards him, and Fabius tried to draw back, but to no avail. Fulgrim caught him by the shoulders, and Fabius felt his heart stutter with an old familiar arrhythmia. Fulgrim was perfect, and his perfection burned like the heat of the sun. I can fix them, teacher. Fabius, I can teach them as you have taught me. I can pull them back from the brink, if you but let me. His eyes glowed with determination as he spoke, and Fabius felt each word like a blow. He had almost forgotten the sheer power of a Primarch's voice. Even now they can be saved. I see it in them. I see the flicker of ancient fires, of honour and heroism. What they were, they can be again, if you but let me go. Set me loose, Fabius, and I shall free your brothers, my sons, from bondage. I can do this. I know it as surely as I know my name.
You only know your name because I told it to you, Fabius snarled,
shoving himself back and away. He stumbled over Kazra's body and staggered back against the overturned examination slab. Fulgrim made to follow, but Fabius thrust torment between them.
You only know what you know because I put it in your head. And still you question me? Still you defy me? Why can you not see that this is all for your own good?
He realized he was screaming, even as the words left his mouth. He turned away, at last allowing the chirurgeon to do its work. The insect-like arms folded over him as the Medicae harness hissed in satisfaction. His anger faded as the chemicals flooded his system. He had not lost his temper in decades. Fulgrim was staring at him. There was no expression on the clone's face. Fabius tried to think of something, anything, to say, but no words came to him. Fulgrim broke the silence. I hear you, teacher, and I understand.
No. You do not, Fabius said it flatly. Without a legion, a loyal one at your back, you will be easy meat for your enemies, for our enemies. Once they know of you, they will not rest until you are dead, or worse. Everything I do is to protect you, to save you, so that you might save others.
I do not require protection.
No. Perhaps not. Perhaps it is time. But I... Ah.
A warning klaxon sang out, echoing through the apothecarium. The lumens flashed through the spectrum, settling on red. Alarms sounded in the tertiary stratagerium. Picked feeds flickered to void view.
It appears as if we have arrived. I must go to the command deck.
Fabius pointed torment at Fulgrim.
You will remain here until I say otherwise, until it is time for you to meet your destiny. Will you do this?
Fulgrim frowned, but nodded.
I will.
I swear.
Fabius smiled.
Good.
He turned to leave.
This is the day I change the ending of our story, Fulgrim. This is the day I finally fix the mistakes of the past. My mistakes and yours. And you will thank me when all is said and done.
Merix stood alone on the command deck. He watched the servitors at work without really seeing them. Everything hurt, and he was trying to find something worthwhile in the pain. The pale shades of Neverborn clustered about him, drinking eagerly from the pall of agony that infused him. They whispered to him, trying to catch his attention, but he refused to listen. They were weak creatures, parasites, and he would not lower himself to treat with them. Not yet. Not until the torment of his body became unbearable. Then, perhaps. Perhaps he would give in and shed his old flesh for something new. A snake shedding its scales, as the Phoenician had done, even as the chief apothecary did. Let the old hurts and failures slough away, to be forgotten. To become something new and better, that was a good dream. He looked at Wulver.
In our own ways, we all grope towards perfection, don't you think?
As ever, the Strategium Overseer didn't reply. He wasn't even sure if the creature was aware of his presence, save in the most general fashion. Merix grunted and flexed his cybernetic hand. Strange muscle tissue swelled and twitched, knotted up amidst the rusty mechanisms. He suspected the new tissue was the source of the ache. It had returned sensation to the limb, but only pain. Tiny demons, unseen by anyone but him, clung to it and played among the pistons and gears. He shook them off, knowing as he did so that they would only return to torment him later. But perhaps not for long. When the Legion was restored, when the Third marched once more as a singular body, perhaps his demons would seek more pleasant entertainments. The need in him that drew them would be quenched then. He could move forward without leaving behind all that he was.
You must draw out his fangs, drain the poison, only then will you heal.
The voice thrust itself through the fog of murmurings, insistent and loud. Merix twitched and looked around, trying to spot its owner. For a moment, he saw nothing. Then a pale shape moved across a nearby viewscreen, turning and spinning in a mad dance. As he watched in growing alarm, it danced from one screen to the next, growing larger or smaller with no seeming rhyme or reason. He could not see its face, only a mass of hair and horns of glossy black, veined with red, rose over a narrow skull. Eyes like crimson mirrors met his own, wherever he looked, and the hull creaked beneath the weight of its hooves. It reached towards him with gilded claws, and suddenly it was not on the screens, but behind him, talons scraping gently across his chest plate as it pressed itself against him.
Look at me! Look at you! All because we wish to become what we were meant to be, it sang softly.
Its voice was like music, soft and insistent.
The future ate us, and we stepped deeper into its mouth.
Who are you?
Merix asked. He did not move.
Who do you serve? Are you one of the Phoenician's consorts come to test my worth? If so, know that I have no patience for riddles in the dark. Make yourself known.
I have not come to tease and tantalize you down thorny paths for the amusement of the Phoenician, it murmured, too close.
Its scent filled his senses, drowning out everything else.
The path, he must be held to the path, or all is lost.
What path? What will be lost?
He demanded, trying to turn. But its claws tightened, sinking through his armor as if it were not there. Sinking all the way to his heart. He froze.
You must find it. You must draw the poison out. He cannot go back. None of us can. The only safety lies deeper in the future's jaws. But not too deep. Be bold, but not too bold, lest your heart's blood runs cold.
Its claws drifted upwards, catching his throat.
Look. Listen, see.
Merix realized that he was no longer alone on the command deck. Alkanex, Palos, and Fabius had arrived. But he could not move, could not speak to them. Alarms were sounding. A clatter rose up from the crew, filling the air. On the screens, in the void, something waited. A world hung grey and dour in the emptiness. The system was all but empty of heavenly bodies. Even the stars were few and far between here. But there was light, of sorts, hanging in the firmament. A sun, lacking in all colour, casting a cold light across a vast and impossible gulf. Merix felt something in him cringe at the thought of being touched by that light.
The sun appears to be artificial, Fabius said, as if from a great distance. It's nothing more than a vast mechanism for capturing excess energy from somewhere and relaying it back to the planet, like an arrangement of celestial mirrors reflecting light and magnifying heat. Ingenious.
And that is important why, Alkanex said. I do not care about the sun, only about the planet.
He snapped an order, and the view of the planet was magnified. The sensor feed sputtered as if in protest. A debris belt of ice and shattered rock circled the grey world in a slow waltz. Light from the false sun glinted on the thin sheets of ice and sprang out and away to be swallowed up by the dark. Ghostly images peopled the planet's orbit, the echoes of ships been and gone, Merrick's thought. The data feeds registered them, sending up alerts that then fell silent as the echo faded, or the Vesalius passed the limit of the signal.
What are they? He croaked.
Sensor echoes. Something about this place is trapping them here.
Fabius glanced at him.
You look ill, Merrick. Is something amiss?
He paused.
Something new, I should say.
The Neverborn tightened its grip about his heart, as if warning him to silence.
I am fine, he said.
Was it afraid of the chief apothecary? If so, it was wiser than most Neverborn he'd encountered.
Well, if you're dying, please do so quietly. Flavius and I are discussing strategy.
We discuss nothing. We are here. These are the coordinates Eidolon provided, and there is our destination. What we seek is here.
Your faith is impressive, especially since our senses can't even be sure that's a planet rather than a semi-spherical confluence of solar gas.
The Lord Commander Primus would not lie, Spider, unlike you.
Oh, I assure you, he's quite adept at it, Flavius. His very existence is a lie of my creation, and he has ever been eager to forget the part I played in conjuring him up.
Merrick was only half listening to their argument. For all Alconex's bluster, he would make no move before he was ready. And Fabius knew it. They were like two curs snarling at one another from opposite sides of a fence. Instead, he tried to concentrate on the voices that echoed up from the vox frequency, whispering warnings and pleas to whoever might hear them. Not all the voices were human, or in a language he understood.
This is the Black Ground, the cremation field of the universe where 1,000 civilizations have their end,
the Neverborn whispered, stroking his cheek with a gilded claw.
These voices are but ashes caught on a cosmic wind.
For a moment, it seemed as if all the voices became as one, a single voice calling up out of deep time, in invitation or perhaps warning. A single voice made from an infinity of voices, all bent to the same purposes. 100,000 ancient signals hijacked by a single will. It whispered up to the Vesalius, and Merrick could hear the frigate whispering back, revealing its secrets to whatever waited on the world below.
We are here in his name, Spider. Do not forget that, Alconex said. We are here in the name of the Third. Now go make ready. I want you ready for suborbital insertion before the next cycle.
Are you not coming with me, Flavius?
Fabius asked.
Alconex laughed. And why would I do that? You have plenty of swords at your disposal. Mine will make no difference.
He smiled.
Besides, someone must watch the ship, just in case more of those milk-blooded cousins of ours come sniffing along our trail.
He gestured to Palos.
Palos will go with you, to make sure you come back in one piece.
He drew his sword and pointed it lazily at Fabius.
Now be a good dog and go collect what we came for. I will be here when you get back.
Fabius looked as if he were considering arguing. Then, with a shrug, he turned away.
Please yourself, Flavius. But do remember that we are on the same side. I would hate for there to be any accidents this late in our renewed acquaintance.
Merrick watched him depart. Something touched him on the hand. He looked up into a mournful face, androgynous but somehow familiar. A moment later, it vanished, and he heard only the hollow echo of fading hooves. Something in its eyes, as black and as empty as the void, stayed with him. A message, or a warning. The ache in his hand grew worse. He cleared his throat.
I do not trust him.
Alconex looked at him. No, nor do I.
We should ensure that we have full control of the ship when he returns.
He said it without thinking, and wondered if he was doing as the Neverborn wished. The little ones had scattered when the other had approached, a sure sign that it was more powerful than they. Would it reward him for this, or was this merely another game played by distant immortals? Perhaps it didn't matter, so long as the goal was accomplished. Alkanex laughed.
If he returns.
Merix clenched his hand.
He will, and we must be ready for him.
Fabius gripped the rail of the gantry and looked down at the staging area. Mutants were everywhere in their hundreds, yowling and snarling at one another. They all wore similar tattered uniforms and scavenged gear, and the weapons they clutched had seen better centuries. Pack leaders fought brutal duels among long empty supply containers, seeking to win the right to accompany the Pater Mutatis on his expedition. Atop a stack of containers, an eyeless, slug-pale creature kept time on a rawhide drum, accompanied by the whirling, shrieking forms of several androgynous creatures. Their flesh had been daubed with crude war paint made from oil, blood, and char, and their tangled manes had been greased into vibrant spikes with corpse fat. Bestial priests, clad in makeshift cassocks and wearing masks made from flayed flesh, wandered among the gathered mutants, growling primitive blessings.
Ave, Pater Mutatis! Ave, Pater Mutatis!
Fabius closed his eyes, letting their prayers wash over him. It was a heady thing, that responsibility. The few stable strains among them owed their existence to his idle tinkering. Only through his kindness did they live and strive. Only through his kindness would they continue to do so. Whatever their origins, these were the natural inheritors of the galaxy, the end result of unregulated exposure to raw entropy.
They are beautiful in their way, I suppose, he said.
He turned.
Wouldn't you agree, Sakara?
The word-bearer stood silently behind him, features hidden behind the crimson plates of his helm. Arian and Igori waited nearby, watching the proceedings with interest.
They are the true children of chaos, Sakara said after a moment. Though they worship one at odds with that notion.
Fabius smiled.
What is a god but the inconceivable made manifest? To them, we are inconceivable, indescribable, angels and demons. You yourself said that I am as much a god as those names you assign such power. Which is to say, no sort of god at all, and thus equally deserving of worship. A blasphemous thought.
Fabius looked at Sakara.
Funny words coming from one who consorts with demons. As I recall, Erebus was quite the one for heresies of all sorts.
Sakara stiffened. Fabius leaned close.
In fact, I have often thought that he did not send you and your brothers after me to punish me for my heresy, so much as to make greater use of it. Before our falling out, both he and Corferon were the beneficiaries of my gene forges. Your legion survives intact, thanks only to my goodwill.
The gods guide us where they will, Sakara said.
And they guided you to me, word-bearer. What does that say about them?
Sakara fell silent. Fabius turned away, satisfied. He paused as Sakara said,
It says that the path they intend for me is thornier than most. Only through great trials may the soul find its true worth. You would do well to remember that.
Fabius sighed, but said nothing. He had tried early on to break the word-bearer, mentally and spiritually, to make him more pliable, more useful. Instead, Sakara had remained obstinate. His faith was a rock upon which Fabius could only sharpen his wit. Down below, three of his specialist overseers were making their way through the crowds, hauling what he'd come for behind them. The overseers were repurposed combat servitors, their numerous limbs ending in electroshock prods, steel whips, and syringe pumps. They ground forward on heavy tracks, venting exhaust from the ports on their backs. Their torsos spun, allowing them to ply their whips and prods with ease. Each had a heavy length of chain hooked to their chassis. The other end of each chain was connected to the collar of a massive war mutant, which padded in their wake. Three times the height of a space marine, and twice as heavy. Sakara grunted in disgust.
Ugly things. Utilitarian, I would say. Their base genetic stock was derived from the natives of heavy gravity worlds and teased into something utterly unique.
Fabius spoke with pride.
The careful application of certain psychosurgery techniques and the insertion of a lessened form of gene seed resulted in extra layers of muscle and insulating fat.
Each of the creatures was clad in crudely forged battleplate, their vaguely simian skulls sealed in iron cages studded with sensors and stim pumps. Thick tangles of cortical implants spilled down their hunched backs and thick shoulders. The implants were a more advanced version of the Nusarian cruciamen, adapted to purpose after many centuries of trial and error. Combined with the stimulants, which were auto-injected by remote signal, the implants served to drive the mutants into a state of incandescent frenzy. The huge, crushing mauls each mutant carried could smash through bulkheads and vehicle hulls alike.
They can shrug off injuries that would cripple a space marine, and once unleashed, will fight until death claims them,
Fabius went on, warming to his topic.
The perfect spearhead for any assault, if I do say so myself.
He had learned a valuable lesson from the expedition to the craft world. They would go in force this time, an army, to seize and hold whatever was to be found.
I still question your decision to leave me behind, Arian said. The World Eater joined him at the rail.
Surely Korag, or even Skarlagrim? No. I may require Korag's expertise, and Skarlagrim must go.
Fabius had not bothered to share those reasons, though he could see the question in Arian's eyes.
You are the only one I can trust to offset Alkanex. It would be unfortunate if he decided to take control of the ship while I was planetside. With you here, he may not be tempted.
Or he might seize the moment and strike while only one of us is around,
Arian sighed.
Which you could well be hoping for,
Fabius smiled.
I trust you will handle yourself with discretion and courage.
And if I have to kill him?
Then do so with a minimum of disturbance. I want the ship in one piece when it comes time to depart.
He paused.
Kill Merix as well, if it comes to it, and any of the 12th millennial who side with them. Separate the wheat from the chaff, all in one go.
Arian nodded.
It will be done, Chief Apothecary.
Of that, I am certain. Igori, come here.
Fabius stepped aside and gestured to her as Arian turned to leave. She joined him at the edge of the platform.
You are wondering why I asked you here, I gather. I can read your face as easily as I might read a medical treatise.
Igori frowned.
You are taking the twins again.
I am, but no others. The rest of you will remain here. Arian must have an army if it comes to it. And that army is your kin, and whatever dregs from the lower decks they can rouse to a war footing at short notice.
And what of me? Am I to lead this army?
She did not sound excited at the prospect, as she might once have. She was angry at being left behind again. His creatures seemed to possess a universal stubbornness, whatever else.
No, Fabius said. I have a greater task for you.
He turned her attentions to the hololithic projection and the pict feed from the chamber. Fulgrim sat at its center, cross-legged, his features beautiful in their repose. Igori gasped. Even at the distance of a pict feed, the impact of a Primarch was substantial. Fabius watched her, noting the dilation of her pupils and her increased respiration. He filed the observations away for later consideration.
What is he?
She looked at Fabius almost accusingly.
Is he one of us?
No. He is both greater and lesser than you. But he is also young and prone to folly. I fear what he may get up to in my absence. I would have you watch him. See to it that he comes to no harm and harms no one. Indeed, see to it that none know he even exists.
She drew back, frowning.
He is important.
Perhaps. Only time will tell.
He looked at her.
Time. And you.
He caught her chin and lifted her face.
I deliver him into your charge, Igori. Guard him well.
She was silent for a moment. Then, softly, she said,
I will, benefactor. By blood and bone, I will keep him from harm, whatever the cost.
Fabius smiled.
I know you will, my dear. That is why the task could fall to no other.